Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. The American Association of University Professors released a report this Monday titled Losing Focus, which highlights how the growth in education spending trails far behind that of athletic spending, especially at community colleges and Division II and III institutions. Also this month, the Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics heard dialogue on many issues facing college sports, including spending on college sports and academics among Division I public institutions. From 2005 to 2012, in every Division I subdivision, the growth in institutional funding to athletics per athlete was greater than the growth in academic spending, and the growth in coaching salaries has been huge. The median coaching salary increased as much as 70%. In inflation-adjusted terms from 2005 to 2012. Joining us this hour to talk about where we put our focus and if it's good or problematic is Amy Perko. Amy is Executive Director of the Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics, also represents the Commission's work and recommendations at universities and various meetings, the NCAA's Scholarly Colloquium, Sports Business Journal's Intercollegiate Athletics Forum. She has served in a variety of leadership positions in sports for more than 20 years and is also quite an athlete herself. She was a member of the Wake Forest Sports Hall of Fame and named to the Academic All-America basketball team three times. And that's just part of a lengthy resume. Our phone number as we discuss this issue is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're also on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Hello, Amy.
Hello, Kathleen.
Thank you very much for being with us.
It's great to be with you.
Did you play tennis, too?
I do play. I currently play tennis and play competitively in a USTA league.
Oh.
So I enjoy sports quite a bit.
Yeah. But you also, I should say, got really good grades.
Well, absolutely. I had a great career at Wake Forest, and certainly the academic focus has been something that I strongly believe in, and the benefits of also education through sports.
Mm-hmm.
And that really has been what the Knight Commission has been trying to, the message it's been trying to get across, to emphasize the college and college sports. And you know, we strongly believe that college sports has a legitimate and proper role to play in college and university life. And our interest has been in preserving that role by putting it into perspective. And we have, over the years, made a number of recommendations that we believe, if acted upon and adopted, would help to preserve that role and put it in perspective and really put the emphasis where it needs to be, both in the emphasis on educational outcomes and the emphasis on making sure that the revenues coming in from college sports are strengthening the overall educational mission of our universities,
mm-hmm.
and not just creating separate entertainment auxiliary departments.
So were you concerned? I know you heard testimony earlier this month, and then this American Association of University Professors issued a report this Monday, which was very critical of institutions of higher education, saying they have lost their focus on academic activities because the spending priority accorded to competitive athletics is diverting the focus of institutions from teaching and learning to scandal and excess, their report says. Have we seen a great change in how much money is going into sports programs in all division schools, 1, 2, and 3?
Well, this report by the American Association of University Professors was, I believe, the first that really looked at this issue across the board, with including the Division II and III schools and community colleges. The Knight Commission's focus has been on the Division I institutions, which there are about 350 institutions competing in that top level, and those are the schools you read about in the paper, and obviously the ones that occupy much of the attention coming off of March Madness.
Right.
But certainly there are, you know, over 1,000 of other institutions in this report looked at those spending trends with those institutions. And certainly we were concerned and have had concern over time that there would be this cascading effect of out-of-control expenditures in some cases at the very top level having an impact on expenditures and expectations at other levels that have very different structures and also really have very different missions for their athletics department.
Mm-hmm.
So we're hopeful that one of the recommendations the commission made was to really improve transparency for finances in college sports. Academic reform really hit a tipping point when graduation rates were first shared publicly back in 1991. And that actually was took an act of Congress to have transparency for graduation rates. We believe the same can be true for financial reform when there's far greater openness about the spending on college sports.
Mm-hmm. Is some of this kind of a catch-22 situation that you need to have a really flourishing sports program that brings in a lot of fans and a lot of ticket money and television exposure and radio exposure and all of that in order to have a sufficient fund to pay your professors well?
Well, you know, there are some myths about the money coming into college sports and where it goes. And actually, there are so many differences between, let's say, a Division I school and a Division III school that it's not fair to really paint a broad brush, because I think there are some things that need to be considered in that respect. Give a Division III school as an example. 40% of all Division III students are athletes, whereas at a major Division I school that plays major college football and has, you know, over 25,000 students, they may only have 700 athletes competing in intercollegiate athletics.
Mm.
And so it's a very different dynamic. And in some Division III schools are using sports to help drive enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
A number of schools in the Division III and Division II schools in the Southeast have added football and men's lacrosse to help increase their male enrollment numbers. And so it's a very different, as I said, dynamic than what's happening in Division I college sports. And, you know, the commission's focus has been to really try to talk about and show what those differences are when in Division I you have 350 schools, and the majority of those schools really do depend on student fees and institutional support for their athletics budget. But you've got a really small number of schools that are really driving the market for coaches' salaries, recruiting expenses, and other type of competitive expenditures. And those are the schools that actually rely very little on student fees and institutional support, and you know, really have these types of incredible increases in spending that you highlighted in your opening there. You know, our database shows that athletic spending at the median for the schools competing in the highest level of football competition, their football spending per football player grew 76%.
Wow.
2005 to 2012, and that's even without considering spending on athletic scholarships. And that's compared to a 6% growth in academic spending at those same institutions.
What?
So you can see the great you know, disparities of the trends that we're talking about. And, you know, we really believe that at a time when U.S. higher education is under unprecedented pressure to be more transparent to the public,
mm-hmm,
and more accountable for the results it achieves, college sports cannot expect to be immune to the same type of standard.
Yeah, and I know that your commission, the Knight Commission, has examined and heard testimony on the growth in coaching salaries. You mentioned this, but this is according to the testimony you received, a big factor in athletic spending. Among the five conferences with the largest athletics budgets, media and coaching salaries increased as much as 70% in inflation-adjusted terms from 2005 to 2012. That's a huge increase, isn't it?
It is a huge increase, and folks who follow sports at the highest level know that, you know, over time, the million-dollar coach used to get, you know, that used to be the story, and now we have so many million-dollar coaches, that's not the story anymore. And so we do have, across Division One, you have schools with $5 million coaches competing in the same division with schools with $5 million budgets. But the increase in coaching salaries obviously has been a huge concern over the years, but there's nothing that, you know, that can be done about that from a regulatory framework, because it would be against the law, and there has been a court case in the past when there was an attempt to cap at least one position of coaches' salaries. And so that has been an issue, particularly in football and basketball, where there's really a blurring of lines between the professional coaches' market and the college coaches' market, and there's really not a lot of difference between what a football coach for an NFL team would make compared to one of the top football programs at the collegiate level.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. And when you talked about the increase in the amount of money per student athlete, what is all that money for? Where is that being used?
Well, the increases, and again, our database, we use the data each institution has reported to the NCAA on their NCAA financial report. USA Today has a database, and our database uses much of the same data that's institutionally reported. It really provides unprecedented access to this academic and athletic and football spending data for public universities in Division One. But the athletic spending, you know, growth, it could include things like travel, recruiting expenses. We do have a way to look at growth in athletic scholarships and a way to, you know, within our database to, you know, take that part of it out so you can look at the other type of expenditures going into athletic spending. But the athletic spending number would include, you know, coaches, as well as personnel working with that sport who are not technically considered coaches under the NCAA definition. That's been a huge area of growth where football staffs, you know, are limited to a certain number of coaches, but you may see a football staff of over 20 people, and some of those would be video coordinators and recruiting coordinators and scouts and, you know, all type of personnel, and that's really where some significant growth has been as well.
Well, if you're going to spend all that money on a college program, then, of course, you would make sure that all of the athletes who are on your teams are very, very good students, right, so that you can point to the real mission of an academic institution, and that's to put forward scholars.
Well, and that's been, you know, the commission's focus as well in terms of focusing on academic integrity and focusing on the educational outcomes. One of the areas where the commission has had some success is in basically promoting a policy that the NCAA and universities should reward practices that make academic values a priority. Things like March Madness, as an example, now teams have to be on track to graduate at least half their players to be eligible to compete in that tournament. And that's an issue that got quite a bit of headlines over the past couple of days since the current champion was banned from the tournament
right.
A couple of years ago for
yeah.
that reason. But again, you know, the commission's stance is that, you know, tournament slots, postseason football game slots, those are privileges to be able to compete for those types of championships. And the financial rewards that accompany them, as well as those opportunities, should be reserved for teams that are meeting legitimate academic standards.
We're going to welcome phone calls. I would imagine that we will have quite a few. There are a lot of ways for you to call in on this, but what we're looking at are two reports or pieces of important knowledge that have come our way in the last few weeks. The American Association of University Professors saying that increasingly institutions of higher education have lost their focus on the academic activities of at the core of their mission. The spending priority accorded to competitive athletics is diverting the focus of institutions from teaching and learning to athletics, and they go farther and say to scandal and to excess. And they look at growth in athletic spending at Division III schools without football programs, too. That's happening at all levels, community colleges as well. Our guest is Amy Perko, and she is executive director of the Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics. They were formed in 1989 in response to a number of visible scandals in college sports. The initial goal to recommend a reform agenda emphasizing academic values in the arena. They have worked since 89 to ensure that intercollegiate athletics programs operate within the educational mission of their colleges and universities. So, what do you think? And then, you know, we've done shows too on the number of universities and colleges that are shying away from hiring full-time tenured professors and going to teaching assistants and adjunct professors in order to save money. But there is no similar effort being made to save money on athletic programs. So put all of that together. What does it say? Is our emphasis misplaced in our institutions of higher learning? Too much money, too much emphasis on sports? What is spending on sports if you're spending a whole lot due to the academic mission of our schools? Here's how you reach us. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are also on Twitter, and that is @KDunnShow. Lines are open for you right now. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls for our guest, Amy Perko, who has served as executive director of the Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics since 2005. She also has served on the U.S. Tennis Association's National Junior Tennis and Learning and Higher Education Committee and the Positive Coaching Alliance's National Advisory Board. She's been in leadership positions in sports for more than 20 years and was a sports leader, champion basketball player when she was in college, and she plays high-level tennis now. All right, let's go to phone calls. Carl in Green Bay is our first caller for you, Amy. Hi, Carl.
Hi there. How are you guys doing?
All right, how are you?
Good, good. The reason I'm calling, there was just an article in the Press Gazette today, Green Bay Press Gazette. Our high school, Southwest High School, is going to spend $850,000 up to $1 million to put in AstroTurf on our high school football field. And as you know, here in Wisconsin, how we're blaming teachers and cutting all their benefits and everything, I think to me it's just ridiculous to be spending this kind of money on a football field when you're, you know, I believe punishing the teachers. And to me, it's just a wrong use of funds. Now, this was raised by the Booster Club. It's not tax dollars. To me, it just it's just an example of money, I think, going into the wrong things. And I'll hang up and off the air.
All right. Thanks. Thanks very much, Carl. Amy.
Sure. Well, again, is one of the things I talked about was the commission has been focused on Division I college sports, and our concern has been this cascading effect of when the public and when others see the types of facilities and have certain expectations of high level sports, it does have some impact, and certainly things that happen at the top level do have a trickle down effect. We see that in recruiting as well, as the structure in Division I college sports with scholarships, the way coaches recruit, the times in which they can recruit, greatly impacts youth sports, and the fact that you have coaches who offer scholarships now to kids as early as their ninth grade impacts, you know, the lives and of youth participating in sports and how those sports are structured and just the competitive nature going earlier and earlier. So, you know, there certainly are impacts and the cascading effect that can have negative consequences, and college sports need to recognize that it's not just about being able to afford something at the very top level, but it also is a question of how is this going to impact everything else related to college sports and its role within the educational mission.
I've always wondered, because this is played up so much whenever a team from Wisconsin is in some kind of, you know, major nationally televised championship, there are all these ads for the school that accompany, you know, come to UW-Madison. They have all the alums or they have students who are there. This is what our school really is. So there must be some kind of connection between a really good sports team and attracting a lot of students who aren't necessarily athletes, right?
Well, there have been studies about, you know, what kind of spillover effects successful teams have on admissions and university donations. And frankly, there are mixed results. There are some that show some pretty strong impacts as it relates to March Madness and exposure for some of those teams that traditionally do not have success. But I think on the whole, when you look at those types of studies and results, you'll actually find that the spillover effects may spike for a real short period of time, but they really don't have a significant impact or as a significant impact as one may think, particularly after, you know, reading headlines a day after a national championship.
Thanks, Carl, for the call. Jeff in Madison, hi.
Well, hi. Interesting topic, and I kind of feel like half of it's being discussed because, unless I missed it when I, you know, was waiting in line, things like the Big Ten Network and ESPN and Learfield Sports and all of these TV entities that are pouring tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars into college athletics, to me seem to mostly offset the tremendous growth in coaching salaries and all that other stuff. I mean, I kind of feel like you're only talking about the growth in costs, but the growth in income for Division I schools, I think, must be pretty dang close to equaling the growth in costs. And the part that upsets me is that we've got amateur athletes basically on television selling beer and trucks. That kind of bums me out. But certainly there's an advertising aspect here that sends a great deal of income to the colleges, doesn't it? And I'll take my comment.
Thanks, Jeff. There. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, that's a great question. And let me just go back to what I talked about. When you look at Division I, there are 350 Division I schools. There are about 65 schools within Division I that really are in the power conferences that have seen these huge increases in media contracts and are part of conferences that have their own networks. For everyone else, the growth in institutional funding to athletics on a per-athlete basis was significantly greater than the growth in academic spending per student. So going back to the differences I was talking about, when you have really three-quarters of Division I depend on student fees and institutional funding to support its athletics budget. And the accelerating expenses by the major programs that have more revenues are really creating unacceptable financial pressures for the rest of the schools. And certainly they have a choice to try to continue to keep up. But the trends we've seen at this point is that they've been trying to keep up, but are doing so by relying more heavily on the institutional funding. And to the point of the TV networks and the conference media contracts, the positive side of generating more revenues obviously creates the challenges and the questions about how those revenues should be used. And certainly this has fueled the debate over how much of the money should go directly to the players or how much money should players have access to, given the history that the revenues have traditionally gone to fuel buildings, more athletic facilities or better athletic facilities, and increases in coaching salaries. We do know with the contracts that are in place for these Big Five conferences, these 65 or so schools that I've talked about, they will see an increase in revenues over $1 billion annually.
Ooh.
So there is a huge influx of money coming into the system that's currently not there. And so that certainly is a big question in terms of how is this money going to be spent moving forward in ways that will strengthen the educational mission and not continue, at least for a certain segment of schools, further professionalization and an evolution to a semi-pro model.
Mm. Do you know who it is that makes decisions, Amy, as to where this influx of money goes? Is that who makes a decision at a community college? Well, they don't get that kind of money, but a Division I school about allocation of funds.
Well, and that's been the one of the big issues with the NCAA. Certainly, there is a board of directors, and the presidents ultimately decide, at least from the NCAA revenues, how that money is divided and what they will provide as rewards, and what how schools have access to that money and how that money is used. And that's the money, the 700 plus million coming in every year from March Madness. The money that's outside the system, outside the NCAA, coming in from, the Big Ten television network or through other conference media deals, that's certainly up to each conference and the presidents ultimately of those universities in the conference to decide, again, how that money is divided, and then up to each university president and athletics director as to how that money is spent. But ultimately, the money coming in to a university from an athletics source certainly doesn't have to go back to athletics. I think in the Big
Right.
Ten network, the Big Ten network certainly has helped decrease the student fees and institutional subsidy portion that was coming to athletics at those universities. That's something that is evident by looking at the trends on our database that you can see the Big Ten. Across the board, the Big Ten institutions rely very small reliance on any type of student fees to support their athletics department.
Let's go next to Joanne in Milwaukee. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. Can you hear me, Kathleen?
Yes.
Yes. I have a question about Division III. She may not have data about that, but UW-Whitewater basketball team just won the Division III national championship in basketball. But I want to know if they get a good academic education, too. She mentioned about how the students should be athletes, and the athletes should be students, and they should get a good education. What about at the Division III? Do they get a good education?
Well, I think the Division III institutions certainly have, again, like I said, a different model of Division I. There are no athletic scholarships in Division III, so there is that, general assumption that, a student coming in without an athletic scholarship certainly is there to be a student but also participate in sports. And I think traditionally the Division III graduation rates have been higher, although there are a number of similar issues with high numbers of transfers among athletes in Division III, and some of the studies being done are starting to surface some of those issues that in the past we thought were just issues at the Division I level. But the data are not as clear at the Division III level yet, but certainly I think Division III, the research that I've seen, Division III athletes have a great experience. And again, the commission's purpose really has been to really promote the positives that can come from college sports, but to promote recommendations for changes that we believe do need to be made that would strengthen the athletics ties to that educational mission.
Hmm. Anything else, Joanne?
No, that's it. Thank
you. All right, thanks. Thanks very much for the call. And when we look at these programs, are we primarily talking football? Is that where the great percentage of this funding goes for new stadiums? And is that the big American sport, or is it true of other kinds of sports as well?
Well, I think it's, certainly there are spending increases across the board, but certainly in football, we've seen football is particularly at the top level of the FBS. There's been such escalation in spending and coaches' salaries and number of personnel. It's something that the Knight Commission has tracked. There are also, opportunities that universities may need to pursue more in the future about how to be more efficient in the spending to provide competition. What has happened, at least in Division I, the FBS level in particular, and in some of the other areas as well, is that football has driven the alignment of conferences. And so all the other sports still are looking for building out their regular season schedule with other conference schools, but the footprint or the regional landscape, the traditional regional landscape of conferences no longer exists. So schools, particularly given some of the realignments, are spending much more money on travel for athletes in, let's say, women's volleyball or baseball, where if there was a different competitive structure or a different national championship structure, it may provide more reason to go to more regional scheduling that could cut down on travel cost, as well as, frankly, cutting down on missed class time of students of having to travel so great a distance just to compete with their conference competitors that are really only there because of the football market for TV and the football appeal for having that conference landscape.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's all interconnected, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Amy Perko is our guest this hour. We're talking, what caught our attention was this report that was released on Monday of this week by the American Association of University Professors, Losing Focus, the name of the report, and they were concerned about the amount of money that's being spent, not only Division I schools, but there's been a cascading effect here, so that when you look at athletic spending, it increased a very, very large amount in all of those kinds of schools, whereas if you look at the academic spending, it's pretty much flat. So what does that say about our priorities? What does it say about, and can you say that, well, it's what people like, it's a big part of the American culture that we love athletics, and even though we probably should spend a little bit more money on academics, it's we can put up with this because we love it so much. What do you think? Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Does it make sense for a high school to spend almost $1 million on a new football stadium when teachers are not making a whole lot of money? Or should we be giving teachers more money and sacrifice a field that's not as terrific? What about the amount of money? Nobody's taken this up. The amount of money that we're paying coaches, those salaries have gone way up in the last 5 years. Is that just what the market will bear? Is that all right? We'll take more phone calls momentarily. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour is Amy Perko, Executive Director of the Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. Let's go to Rick in Monona. Hi, Rick.
Hey, great program. It's something that your topic is something that really needs to be explored. There's so much money flying around these days that kind of that are under the radar of most people. I read a book that I wanted to highly recommend. It's called King of Sports by Greg Easterbrook, and it's all about the money and the issues that seem to be below the surface, like concussion problems and professional and in college sports. Kathleen, you mentioned the salaries of coaches. I just read in USA Today that Mike Krzyzewski from Duke's salary is $9 million.
Oh, my gosh. And, are you serious?
And John Calipari of Kentucky is $6
million.
And our own Bo Ryan is over $2 million. So, I mean, there's lots of money that's flying around. And here's my point, that with all this money and all of these, I'm really glad we're discussing it, but, boy, when it comes to making any changes, I mean, the Badger fans went just wild recently when we were in the Final Four.
Right.
I mean, there's a whole lot of pride, and I think a lot of people probably don't care very much about it. What they want to see is the trophy in the case. And so I'd like your comment on that. I think the challenge is going to be, how do you manage this with so much at stake for states or Green Bay Packers? People bleed green and gold. It's sort of in our blood, I think.
Yeah, it's sort of a religion in the state. Amy?
Absolutely. I mean, college sports is treasured by the American public, and we're not trying to change that, but we believe there are changes that can be made that are not going to impact the passion or the games or the experience for the athletes. Let me give you an example. March Madness. The way the incentive structure in the NCAA works is that each team that wins games, each team that appears in the tournament, and then for each win in the tournament, they are generating money for their conferences. And those wins turn out in combination to equal over $1 billion to those conferences for the wins of those basketball teams. Now, that's an incentive system that the NCAA has said, we care about winning basketball teams, and we're going to reward you for that. And what we've said is, let's change the rewards. At a minimum, cut that in half. And let's put half of that money into rewarding educational outcomes, or half of the money into some type of structure that helps to incentivize keeping athletic spending in check. That's not going to change the passion for March Madness or the passion the fans have for their teams when they win, but it will change how some of the schools and athletic directors make decisions about how they spend their money and about what they prioritize. And we've said the same thing with the college football playoff money. We're going to be looking at a situation when that starts in January. For the first time of next year, this new college football playoff will generate $500 million annually. And that money, the majority of the money, is going to just go to the top five conferences. And there's also going to be some incentives and financial rewards for the teams that participate in those in that playoff competition. And again, we've said with that much new money coming in, a portion of that, and a significant portion of that, should be going to reward educational outcomes and should be directed in ways that strengthen the educational mission. Well, what happened is when we promoted that type of concept, the leaders of that playoff came back and said, well, we will agree to setting aside 8% of the money to reward institutions for being on track to graduate at least half their players. And that was an unfortunate and token gesture. And we're hopeful that they'll revisit that before those new revenues start flowing in and make sure that they're being directed in ways that treat athletes fairly and support the number one priority of the educational mission.
Well, where did they want the money to go?
Well, in terms of the way they've, at least right now, designed that structure, is they want the money to go flow to the conferences really without any strings attached, so that they can make the decisions about how to spend that money. And certainly we understand the institutional autonomy with regard to spending, but history has shown that there needs to be some regulations and incentives because where we've been headed on spending is not a good direction. And the trends show that, the data show that, the current debates about whether we have semi-professional college sports in operation and college sports that care about education in name only certainly shows that. So we've got to change some dynamics, and we've got to change the way the money is being directed and what we're rewarding in college sports.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for your call, Rick. Let's go to Bill in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I guess my comment started out centering around the fact that the Final Four coverage was not available on broadcast TV, at least not in Madison. And that doesn't seem fair to me because the college system is, taking advantage of publicly funded institutions. If not, you know, every team in the playoffs, certainly the system in general does. And you know, the public can't even watch it anymore unless they get a private subscription. And I guess that's the thing that bothers me in general about big-time college sports is that the central value in sports is no longer fairness. It's money.
Hmm. Is that a fair assessment, Amy?
Well, that has been our concern, and that certainly the money and college football has been the biggest engine driving college sports, and the money that can be created through conference realignments and TV networks. Televising college sports has certainly driven the landscape over the past 5 years, no doubt. And, you know, the commission did a lot of work and had a study on governance and structural changes to college sports. And the major recommendation was that more changes are needed to restore, you know, integrity to an aspect of university life that is treasured by the American public. The commission recommended that there be outside directors who are really viewed as being accountable to the public interest and the collective good of college sports, that those types of outside directors be appointed and added to the NCAA Board of Directors. Currently, the commission feels there's too much conference and institutional competitive and financial interest in the governance, and there's not enough, there's not an aspect that looks at just the accountability to the public and what's in the best interest of college sports as a whole. And again, we're hopeful that there will be some positive changes in that area as well.
Thanks, Bill, for the call. Frank on Alaska, hello.
Yes, hi. I'd like to hear the guests, and if she can speak to the commission, the issue of the student-athlete as employee and the question of unionization, both as the problem and solution to this, is obviously it reflects the problem of society as a whole of the high F's and the half-nats. I think you've already addressed the question of bigger schools, smaller schools, and money, coaches paying way too much compared to their student-athletes, and how this question of unionization and students as employees is going to affect actually probably be the solution to this whole problem.
Thanks, Frank.
Sure. And the caller is speaking about the recent decision by the National Labor Relations Board in Chicago, that regional director who ruled that Northwestern football players could be represented by a union and should be considered employees. That was based on a petition that was filed by a Northwestern football player. And obviously that does apply to private universities, since they're under that National Labor Relations Act. With regard to how the commission feels about that decision and basically the petition by the athletes, the Knight Commission actually supports many of the benefits being sought for college athletes by groups like the College Athletes Players Association, which is the group behind the Northwestern petition. Benefits like providing multi-year scholarships, covering medical expenses for athletic injuries, and certainly providing funding for former athletes to complete their education. And in fact, many universities do those types of things now. But we believe that colleges and universities, not unions, need to be the ones to act to guarantee those types of benefits and make any changes where changes are necessary to improve those types of benefits. And as I've said before, we would also urge universities to adopt many of the recommendations the commission has made that aim to treat athletes as students first, not as professionals. Things like reducing the time athletes are required to spend on their sports. And as we've talked about on this program, increasing the transparency about where the money in college sports goes.
Mm. But,
and you know, finally changing the rewards, changing the financial rewards that I've also touched on, and making sure that we are rewarding the educational outcomes and making sure the money is directed toward universities' missions of educating young men and women.
It's such a David and Goliath story almost, isn't it? Because as you're talking, I'm thinking about how this goes, as somebody said, about the football field in Green Bay, and when you mention the amount of time that people spend. I mean, it's even true in high school sports, for heaven's sake. I, as a parent, was appalled by how many hours my child had to play, had to be in practice every day for whatever the sport happened to be, instead of school, instead of studying. You know, it was hours and hours. It's just so pervasive in our society, isn't it?
Well, what the other side of it is, you know, and as an athlete, I love participating in sports, and I
sure.
I do believe there are educational and developmental positive that come out of that. But I do think that, in general, we have, in many cases, gone overboard. And there's a good book, Tom Ferry, ESPN reporter, wrote several years ago, The All-American Race to Make Champions of Our Children.
Mm.
And there, you know, there's data that shows specialization in one sport really is not beneficial to an individual until a certain age, and certainly specialization at earlier ages has led to overuse injuries and lots
sure.
of other burnout issues. And so there are a lot of things going on in mm-hmm. sports across the board, and that runs to, again, one of the areas that there do need to be improvements is, you know, the role of the coach and role of coaches at every level. And the love we have for sports is not going away and shouldn't go away, but we should recognize that and make sure that coaches who have such an influential role are properly prepared and educated for the role they have, both from a health and safety standpoint and from their role as educators.
Yeah.
And so to make it the most positive experience it can be.
One more minute, one more phone call. Tony. Oh, Tony is gone. All right, Tony. Sorry you didn't wait. Well, thank you very, very much. Do you find that all the changes that you are attempting to make here are slow to become reality, or are you seeing success on certain fronts more rapidly than you thought?
Well, so the Knight Commission has been at this for a long time,
mm-hmm.
of course, and actually some of the public debates that are in the headlines today have created a greater sense of urgency and have, in fact, helped our message gain more traction, the message of, you know, treating athletes as students first and making sure the focus is on the educational mission. Unfortunately, changes that the commission has promoted, some of them have not, you know, gotten traction in the past. We have had some, but not nearly enough. And so we're hopeful that, you know, with the attention on the very public and critical debates about, you know, how athletes are treated and the money coming into the system, that we can really get support and better educate the public, and as well as getting leaders to, you know, come to the table with solutions that will work for the whole and not just, you know, a small group of universities or conferences, but really looking at the role of college sports and the impact college sports has on other levels of sport in society.
Yeah. Amy, thank you so much for being with us. It was a great hour.
Well,
thanks.
You're welcome.
Amy Perko, Executive Director of the Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics. We were referencing a couple things that were going on. The report on Monday of this week, you may want to look up, by the American Association of University Professors, looking at colleges increasing their spending on sports faster than on academics, and this is happening at all levels, Division I schools, II, III, and also community colleges, and also the ongoing work of the Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics, in which they're looking at spending issue, how athletes are treated, and the academic success or lack of academic success of some athletes and how to change that. Thanks very much to K.P. Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks to KP for on-air production. Tomorrow, the life of Edward Snowden, and we're going to do an open line. We haven't done one for a year. That's hour number two. Thanks for listening.